Congratulations, bro.
21st century, that's all you've got. Put a heat pack on it.
What the fuck do we do?
And I trust you because you're short, you're balding,
desperate.
Chubby, desperate. You know, I mean, I feel like I can trust you. If I die, I'm going to become even more of a god than I probably already am now. So what does it matter?
Yeah, I just want there to be podcasts about me thousands of years from now. Fuck everything else that comes after me.
If you're going to rub one out over Carrie, young Princess Leia, it's good to have a photo built into the tissue box.
It can go in your limoncello. Wow.
Well, yeah. Welcome to Life of Caesar, episode something. Life of Augustus. I don't know. Who am I? Where am I? Don't know what's going on, but I do know Ray. Hey, Ray.
Hey, how are you?
Good. We have a guest coming on.
We do know that.
So let me try and add him to the call.
This is going to go so smoothly.
Hello, Gary.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Not bad.
Do you have a proper microphone?
I do. How's that?
Bit better.
I got a
Keep
Rode
talking.
Podcaster, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I hear you better now. You sounded a little bit echoey before.
No, it just wasn't up to my mouth before.
That's what Ray said to me in Vegas.
No.
Boom! Boom! 10 seconds in. Vegas joke. Done. Out of the way. Complete.
Check. Next.
Gary's in shock already, I think. He's like,
sorry, Gary.
I don't know. I've been listening to you for a long time, so this isn't a...
I know, but right now you're thinking, oh, no, what did I get myself into? Gary, welcome to the show. Now, there's been some debate between Ray and myself about how we correctly pronounce your surname. My best guess, and you know that I am a linguistic genius, it's am I close?
Nope. It's one hard Germanic syllable. Arnt.
Arnt.
Yes.
Yes.
Just think of it as a verb, just as a command. Arnt.
Arnt. Gary, Arnt. Now, welcome to the show, Gary. Now, this is Ray's favorite kind of show. Because we've done no prep for this whatsoever. I just said, look, we'll just get Gary on. He'll just talk. Actually, that's not true. I think you listened to one of Gary's travel podcasts, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Now, Gary, why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
As you mentioned, my name is Gary Arnt. I used to be an internet entrepreneur. I started a very early internet company in the 90s.
Whoa.
Sold by... Yeah.
Nice.
Sold my company before the shit hit the fan. Do you remember? So I know Cam, you've done a lot of internet stuff. Do you remember a product called Cold Fusion?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was the first Cold Fusion developer in the world. My college roommate wrote it. So,
whoa! Wasn't that a macromedia product eventually?
Well, they eventually bought it. Yeah, the company was called Allaire. So
that's right.
As he was building it, I was living with him. And he had people that were coming in saying, and what it did for people that don't understand, it was an early way to hook up a database to a website. So, and it used tags like HTML tags. And the other interesting thing at the time, back in, and this is in the 90s, it used Windows NT, which was the cheap, low-cost alternative for doing a server rather than having to get a Spark station.
I just got to correct you there, Gary. It's not pronounced Windows NT. It's pronounced Windows NT. A bit like your surname. It's just Windows NT.
Windows Northern Territory.
Even I know that. Yeah.
There's an Aussie joke. There's somebody who knows his Aussie jokes. Yes. Okay. So Cold Fusion. Yeah. Keep going.
So I started a company that basically did custom web applications. Today, databases hook up everything. It's a very common thing. But back then, it was not... and I grew the company, sold it, started a couple other companies. Then the shit hit the fan. One was a network of video game websites. We were doing really well until that happened. Then I kind of got bored, didn't know what to do. Went back to school for a couple years, studied geology and geophysics. And then I got the bright idea to travel around the world. So in 2007, I sold my home and I thought I'd travel around the world for a year or two. And it kind of became 10, and I'm sort of still doing it today.
So I've been following you on Twitter and Facebook, I guess, for a while. And, yeah, that's all you do. You're just traveling and taking photos and talking about cool places. And so you approached me recently and said, hey, why don't I come on and talk about all of these places that you talk about on the shows? Because I've actually been there. And I thought, what a great idea. So, listeners, this is going to be a little bit different from our normal shtick. I just am really interested to know a little bit about these places, Gary. But also, you're a professional traveler. And I'm hoping you'll be able to impart some tips on traveling the Gary Ernt way, because I'm sure you've learned a lot that could help us amateur travelers.
Right.
And by the way, to properly say my last name, you have to be constipated. Okay. So that
I think Cam's halfway there.
Yeah.
Yeah, the amount of meat I eat. Yeah, that's not a problem. So, you've been traveling for 10 years and you are also a photographer.
Yeah, I knew nothing about photography when I started. I just bought a camera that was way over my head that I didn't know how to use, took a lot of shitty photos, and then realized I was taking shitty photos, and then just kind of incrementally figured out how to stop doing that. And that's kind of how I explain how I...
Now you're an award-winning travel photographer.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, have you got to anything you have a problem yet, Ray?
Do I have what?
Have you got to the point where you've admitted you have a problem yet? That photo that you posted on Facebook of you making a little love heart with your hands around my head, that's a sign that you've got a problem, my friend. I mean, that's kind of like out of a stalker film, I think. I'm worried that you've got my photo up on the wall of your house and little candle, little shrine. I'm starting to wonder if you wait, by the time you leave Australia in the middle of this year, if I'll still have both my kidneys.
Well, we'll see. Look, don't worry about all the different places in my house. I have your photo. If we could just focus on the interview, because I'm really excited about this. Yeah. We'll talk about that later.
So you just won an award, at least one recently, right, Gary? I think I remember seeing.
Yeah, I've been named Travel Photographer of the Year in North America 3 times now. And
Holy shit.
Wow. Yeah, I've won a
bunch
of other.
Did you talk about Trump during your acceptance speech?
No,
good. Probably best. Probably best.
I just have spent the last hour watching Trump's press conference of today, and I really didn't want to do these shows. I just wanted to keep watching that. It is the funniest thing I have seen since.
I'm not ranting.
Oh my God, man! At one point, sorry, Gary. We'll get back to you in a second. At one point. Journalist says when he finally starts taking questions from the journalist, and before he does take questions from the press corps, he says, look, I'm going to say a few things, then you might have questions, or maybe you won't. Who knows? Maybe you won't have any questions. Like the press corps is not going to have any questions. Anyway, he gets a question from the guy. Some guy goes, look, yesterday you said that you won by the biggest electoral college margin in history. And that's not true. And he starts rattling off stats. And Trump goes, well, I meant biggest... As for Republicans, because, and the guy goes, no, that's not even true. And he starts rallying up. And Trump goes, well, look, somebody just told me that, right? I just heard that. Somebody told me that somewhere. Next.
I'm repeating it. That's all. So you can't blame me.
This guy is like fucking the Neo in the Matrix. When after he finally figures out the Matrix in the first film and he fights Agent Smith and he's just like blocking, like yawning, boom, boom, boom. Trump is... He's Neo, man. Like, it just doesn't matter. Oh, so I said something wasn't right? Who cares? I'm the president. Doesn't matter. Boom. Next. Bam. Fuck it. It was like Shaolin Kung Fu master level performance of just shit deflection. Unbelievable.
The spoon is fake.
Yeah. Fake spoon. Fake spoon. He refers to the New York Times several times as the failing New York Times. He says to one journalist... Look, no, I'm not going to ask you a question because there are people here whose ratings are better than yours. It is. Oh my God! It's like Alec Baldwin can't even touch this on SNL, man. Trump is his own SNL sketch. It's just
it is true.
It is mind-boggling, jaw-dropping, incredible.
Hubris.
Anyway, back to you, Gary.
So you won 3 awards.
How do How do, like, professional photographers who've trained feel about the fact that you've won that three times? Do they ever come up to you and say,
break your camera,
nice things to you?
I've had one kind of snide, a photographer say something kind of snide to me in person, because she, like, you know, went to school, got a degree in it and all this stuff. And I just don't think it's rocket science. I think you kind of just get an idea of, you know, what makes for a decent photo. You learn what the settings are in your camera, and you just kind of gradually improve.
Boom.
Yeah. You learn through experience. Yeah.
That's my basic philosophy of life, is nothing is rocket science except maybe rocket science.
But even then, I'm willing to give it a go.
Yeah. Look, I'm not a gynecologist, but I'll take a look anyway. That's basically been my my philosophy. So Gary, let's talk about, where haven't you been? Is there anywhere you haven't been? Let's start
it's
there.
It's probably easier.
Yeah, actually. When I started, I went through the Pacific and I went island hopping, and I've been to all the little island countries in the Pacific and in the Caribbean. I have not been to Russia,
whoa,
mainland China, Brazil.
Whoa. Whoa.
So there's a bunch of really big countries I haven't been to.
Wow. So
no particular reason, I just haven't.
Yeah, yeah.
We got the
okay,
whole world,
so let's start with Caesar-esque places. Oh no! Before we get into that, give me your travel tips. Like, as somebody who travels a lot, what are the two or three top tips that you think we should all know about how to travel like a pro?
You know, first of all, I think that if you like history, and if you're listening to this podcast, you probably do. Travel is really kind of where a lot of this stuff comes to life. You can read the books and listen to the podcasts and everything else, but I think when you actually go to some of these places and you're there, it kind of comes to life and it affects you in a way that just in an academic sense, it's not going to. And I think that a lot of the reason I enjoy traveling so much is because it's an opportunity to learn. And the people that get bored from travel, like you go on a trip through Europe or something and they complain, oh, it's just another cathedral, it's another Roman ruin. If you dig into what makes that different or the story behind it, there's something very interesting about it, and I think you can get a lot out of it. As for tips, I think a lot of people, they obsess and they worry too much about travel. Like there's a lot of people write about packing tips. My packing tip is throw shit in a bag and go.
Okay.
Don't worry about it. Because if you get something, you can buy it. And if you brought too much shit, you can leave it.
It's what I call man packing. It's like mansplaining, but it's just man packing. Like Chrissy, we'll be going somewhere. She'll start packing a week earlier. I'll pack like 5 minutes before the car turns up. It's just like, yeah, throw some shit in the bag. Let's go, man. Boom.
Yeah, so you got a toothbrush, some toothpaste, a razor, some clothes. You can do laundry, you can buy stuff, and it's fine. Yeah. I don't even plan when I go on a lot of trips. I'll just show up, and then, you know, the internet is like cheating. It's made travel so simple. If you have a smartphone, and, you know, the big difference is when I started traveling, I began traveling in that window between when Steve Jobs announced the iPhone and when it hit the stores. So I didn't have a smartphone when I traveled, and now... Mm. I have an iPhone 7, I have international roaming, and I can translate, I can pull up a map, I can do all sorts of things, and the information makes it so simple, I can book rooms, it's just never a problem.
Nice.
If you can get internet connectivity or you can get a SIM card in the country that you're in, I've gone to the US before and really struggled to get any connectivity on my phone.
It really, the U.S. is not a very good country for that, although there are things now where, so I just was through JFK a few weeks ago, and there are now SIM card vending machines you can get. So these things are available. If you land at Heathrow, for example, there's SIM card vending machines with Three Mobile. £20 gets you unlimited data and voice for a full month, and you can tether.
Nice.
And in a lot of other places, I was in Croatia once, I remember. I got like 5 gigs of data for some ridiculously low price. So it's really cheap in a lot of places as well. And I use T-Mobile here in the U.S., and they have unlimited data roaming for like 140 different countries right now. And I've been shocked where I could use it. I was able to use it in Kyrgyzstan, of all places. So.
Yeah, that's high on my list of
they should put that in the commercial.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're going to Kyrgyzstan, font. Yeah. Yeah.
Don't knock Kyrgyzstan. It's actually a really great place. And a lot of people, I think that it's this weirdly pronounced, spelled thing that they don't know about. It's kind of a joke. You know, if you wanted to make up a goofy name of a country, you'd call it Kyrgyzstan. But it's a really beautiful place. And I really enjoyed it.
It sounds like something Sacha Baron Cohen would have a character who came from there.
That's true. I am the dictator of Kyrgyzstan. Yes.
So, Gary, as you know, we're trying to get our tour off the ground for 2018. We're going to do the Caesar, Alexander, Napoleon, Cold War, Renaissance tour. Because we believe in keeping it simple.
The buffet.
Yeah, so let's start with Caesar destinations. You know, where have you been? What do you recommend, Gary, in terms of Caesar-esque locations?
Well, I mean, you got to start with Rome, obviously. And I think the thing to remember when talking about stuff with Julius Caesar and Augustus is that a lot of the stuff that if you want to say, oh, I'm walking on the same place they walked or I'm touching the same thing, that's probably not going to happen. Because when Caesar was in power, Rome was kind of a dump. And I think it was Augustus that said, you know, I got a city of bricks and I left you a city of marble or something like that. So there was a lot of construction that took place during the Roman Empire. And the period of time that you guys are focusing on is kind of the end of the Republic. And so a lot of the stuff you see in Rome, like the Colosseum, a lot of the arches, things like that, were all built later. But there are a couple of things that date back to the time of Caesar, even though they're only ruins.
Right.
Probably the best thing that deals with Augustus, but is his palace on the Palatine Hill. So it overlooks the Forum. And if you go visit the Forum and you do a tour, you can visit that as part of it. And you can kind of see his spread, all his rooms and stuff like that. That's probably the best remaining artifact dating from the time of Augustus. There's the Basilica of Julia, which exists in the Forum area. That was commissioned and initially built by Julius Caesar, but it was rebuilt several times, and I think there's like one pillar that's still remaining that you can see. There was a Temple of Caesar, and again, like just some of the ruins are left. I don't even know if there's like a partial pillar. This is all in the Roman Forum area, which is right below the Palatine Hill. So all that stuff is there. And if you do go there, I suggest you also get a guide, because it really makes a big difference. Because if you just go there by yourself, you're just kind of walking through a bunch of bricks and marble, and you really wouldn't know what was where and, you know, the significance of everything.
There aren't apps for that now?
There probably are. I think there are probably some audio guides, but having an actual person. I did a photo tour in Italy a couple of years ago, and we got a guide for our trip to the Forum, and it made a huge difference. Not far from the Forum is, so there's the Roman Forum, and pretty much whenever you're talking about the Forum, you're talking about that Forum. Julius Caesar, created another Forum. It's called the Forum of Caesar, which is not far away. It's, I forget the name of the big structure. It's a big 19th century structure, kind of overlooks the whole city, but it's kind of on the other side of that. It's within walking distance because the Forum was getting too crowded, so he built another one for commerce and offices to take place. That's still there. Pompey's Theater. Pompey's Theater, so a lot of people go to the Forum and they think that, oh, this is where Caesar was assassinated, and it's not. He was assassinated in Pompey's Theater, and if you want to see that, there's kind of a couple different places it's sort of spread out over. There's a place called the Largo de Torre Argentina, and it's sort of just like a square that has a bunch of ruins there. That is some of old Pompey's theater. And there's a restaurant, and I highly suggest if you guys, when the tour goes through Rome, get a reservation at this place, because the basement of the restaurant is also part of Pompey's Theater. Wow. And I don't I don't think they know exactly like the spot where Caesar was killed. I don't know how they could know it. And I think it's kind of a marketing gimmick, but the guys that own the restaurant say, oh, he was killed in our basement. It's called the Restaurante de Pancranzio, and they're really cool about it. So if you have dinner there, they'll let you go in the basement and check it out.
Wow. Yeah, we could reenact it. Yeah.
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 Very nice. Cool.
I was going to say some other stuff that dates back to the time of Augustus. Probably the best preserved building in Rome, I think, is the Pantheon. And the Pantheon, which is standing now, is in pretty good condition, considering it's, you know, almost 2,000 years old. It's not the original one that was built by Agrippa. I think it was destroyed 100 years after it was built. So this is kind of the second one. But they kept the cornerstone. And if you look, you can see Agrippa's name down in the cornerstone of the building, which is kind of cool. The other big thing in Rome itself would be the Mausoleum of Augustus. When I was last there, I walked past it, and it was fenced off. They had a chain link fence. They were doing some renovations. But I just read an article that has been reopened, and they're going to be doing some sort of presentation or show there where they display a video or something on the walls of it. And I think the mausoleum, all it ever held was his ashes.
Well, it's got Marcellus's ashes, too. I think there was a lot of people's ashes that ended up in there. Of course, they were all... Shit happened to them, I think, when the Visigoths came in. But yeah, Marcellus's ashes, which we've just talked about on the show, or we've recorded, it may not have gone out yet, was the first ashes to go in before it was even finished. Yeah, right. No, I read that article as well. They're going to be projecting like a multimedia display of the history of Rome on there. And there's talks about it being renovated, which have been going on for, I think, since Mussolini. He was going to renovate it. Something happened to him. I'm not sure what happened to that guy, but he's probably still out there somewhere.
He fell to pieces.
Yeah. So the mausoleum, yeah, we definitely need to go there. Oh, did he? Yeah, that's right. He's the new Mussolini, yeah. Okay. What else in Rome do you recommend?
So that's the ancient history stuff in Rome. I recommend there's two day trips, short day trips, less than an hour from Rome that you can go visit. One is Ostia Antica, which was the port city of Rome, because Rome's not on the sea. And it's surprisingly well preserved. I would say it's maybe not quite on a par with Pompeii, but it's, you know, you can see all the shops. You can see the mosaic work on the floors where fish sellers and, you know, beef sellers and whatnot had different stalls. You can see the toilets. All sorts of stuff like that. And hardly anybody goes there. I mean, you can have the whole place to yourself. It's like a 45-minute train ride from Rome and very easy to get to. And I'm kind of surprised more people don't bother to take the time to go visit it. Because, like I said, it's rather well-preserved for a Roman city, and you can kind of see the layout of everything a lot better than what you're going to see in Rome, because unlike with Rome, there just wasn't centuries of people kind of all living in the same spot.
Yeah.
And today, I think it's like 2 kilometers from the sea just because of silting from the Tiber River that over time has just kind of added up. And the other cool place to visit is Hadrian's Villa up in Tivoli, which is, again, about a 45-minute outside of Rome. It's up in the hills. And this is another place where hardly anybody visits, but you can see some parts of it are very well preserved. You know, there's a swimming pool with a lot of statues that are still there. And it's not of the time period you guys are discussing in the podcast, but again, it's one of the better preserved Roman ruins that you're going to find in the area. And it's definitely, if ancient Rome's your thing, I would definitely take the time to go visit.
Excellent.
And if you're interested in the Renaissance era stuff, there's also in Tivoli the Villa d'Este, which was he was a cardinal at the time, and he was really gunning for Pope. So he built this fantastic water garden with fountains, just tons of fountains, and it's just incredibly beautiful. I don't think he ever became Pope, but it's still pretty neat.
Shouldn't he have focused on saving lives or helping the poor as opposed to building? Never mind. We're getting off topic. All right.
Okay, so that's Rome.
In Rome itself, I've been to Rome a couple times. One time I visited as part of a cruise ship stop, and it was one of the worst experiences I've ever had. If you're going to go to Rome, you got to at least spend several days there. Don't try to, you can't do it in a couple hours. It's not possible. Yeah. And if you want to see where all the marble went that was covering the Colosseum and in the Forum, go to the Vatican, because that's where they got a lot of it from. They just used it as a quarry.
And wear long pants if you go to the Vatican.
I actually snuck into the Vatican. So they have this long line, and you have to go through the metal and all that crap. And then at the end of the line, there's this like wooden fence, and people come through the fence. And I had my camera, and I was taking pictures of the Swiss guards, and I was maneuvering myself. And then I kind of positioned myself real quickly to the other side of the wooden fence. And then I just walked in backwards.
Wow. Well, that's the best tip so far. How to sneak in to the Vatican.
Walk in backwards.
Vatican is not the best security.
I was there once, and they wouldn't let me into the cathedral, St. Peter's, because I didn't have long pants. It was the middle of summer in Rome, hot as fuck. I had shorts and sandals on, and they wouldn't let me in. So there you go. Missed out.
Another cool tip, if you want to go to the Vatican, I assume they still do this. I signed up for a tour of the Vatican Gardens, which they usually do in the morning. And so you get to basically see the rest of the country. So you get to walk around the Vatican Gardens and see like the Vatican radio or whatever, and see basically the bits that the most of the tourists don't get to see. And then they drop you off at the front of the museum. My other big travel tip for Rome is if you want to do something like the Vatican Museum or the Forum, don't go between like 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. because all the tour buses and the cruise ships are going to be hitting that at about between 9 and 11 a.m. So either go really early or go in the later afternoon because they'll be gone by then. Because I remember I went to the Vatican on this cruise ship stop. There was a line of people going all the way around the Vatican. I had to leave my camera bag. I go through the museum, go back to get my camera bag. This is about 12:30. Line was totally gone. You could have just walked right in. And because it was all of these buses of people hitting it at the same time.
Right. That's a good idea. Not to rush you or anything like that, but when you get a chance, if we can leave the mainland, did you ever make it to Sicily?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, nice.
Didn't explore a ton of Sicily, but there again, the cruise ship problem was a huge, where was it? It was Taramino I went to. And you have these small towns, again, Roman ruins, everything, swamped with people in the middle of the day, you know, wall-to-wall people in the streets. And then come like 4 or 5 o'clock, the whole place just empties out.
Wow.
So make a lot of your plans according to that, especially if you're going in the summer and in the high season.
Okay.
So, Gary, when you travel to these places, do you what kind of accommodation do you look for? Personally, I always go for like lower end sort of establishments because I want to get the feel for the real. I don't want to be stuck in sort of glassy, marbly, high end hotels. Also, because I'm poor as fuck, so I can't afford it. But is there a particular kind of accommodation strategy that you have?
I pretty much do the same thing because as long as they have Wi-Fi and hot water, I'm happy. I'm really not fussy. And in Europe, you'll find a lot of these 2-star hotels. So, for example, I remember one time I arrived in Rome. I was at the train station. I had no place to stay. I got online. There's a ton of these sort of cheap pensioner 2-star hotels within the area of the train station. I just grabbed one of them. It was fine. You know, the rooms will be a little bit smaller because it's Europe and, you know, because it's a big city. But you'll end up paying under $100 a night. Sometimes probably a lot less now given the strength of the U.S. dollar. Those are the kind of places I tend to stay in. Sometimes even a youth hostel. I'm too old to stay in one of the dorm rooms, but if they have a private room or something, I'll stay in one of those sometimes.
Yeah.
You're a man of the people. Yeah. I admire that.
Dorms. Well, you know, the more money you spend on a hotel room, and you're going to be unconscious the majority of time you're there.
Yeah.
Good point.
Rather than spending $200 a night on a room, spend $100 and stay two nights and just extend the amount of time that you get to. You know, oh, I should mention one other thing. Never eat any meal if you can see the Colosseum or any of these iconic structures, because you are going to pay an outrageous fee for the privilege of doing so. I made the mistake of this once. I had lunch at a place that was like across the street from the Colosseum, and it was freaking ridiculous. I've seen, you know, heard stories of people being charged like 500 euros for a lunch in St. Mark's Square. And just go a couple blocks away where you can't see it, and the prices are going to drop dramatically.
Yeah, Heather and I did that. We got a flat pizza each, a bottle of Coke, water, no gas, and ice cream, and it was like 9 or 7 euros each or whatever, and it was absolutely fantastic. And like you said, it was in the middle of nowhere. You can just see all the locals and how they're interacting and how they're living their life. And those 30 minutes that we were there really gave us an idea of what the people of Rome were really like. We really enjoyed that. So that's an incredibly accurate tip that people should follow.
And when I was in Rome, I've never used the subway. I know a lot of people do. I just walk because even when you walk, you're going to go past interesting stuff. Even like some of the local churches have, you know, museum quality artwork in it. Just some random church. You'll have, you know, they have water fountains that are running all the time. If you got a water bottle, you can just fill it up real easy. There's always something you're just going to kind of run across if you walk. And so if you just kind of set yourself to walking, or maybe, you know, if you want to go across town to something, take an Uber. That's something you can do. But yeah, I prefer to walk when I can, depending on the town.
Right. That would be cool.
And Americans have a reputation, Gary, for being annoying tourists. Do you take any
live up to that?
Special efforts to de-annoy yourself, de-Americanize yourself when you travel? Do you learn a little bit of the language? Do you dress down? What do you do?
He tells everybody he's Canadian.
Never. I would never do that. I do not. Any people that punt on third down, I do not trust.
I don't know what that means, but
it's Canadian football.
Point, really,
it's a different. The difference between Canadian football and American football is the difference between rugby union and rugby league.
Gotcha.
I'll put that in Australia terms.
Yeah, but so. I don't even know what that means because I don't give a fuck and I don't follow sport. So anyway, but. So you don't de-Americanize yourself. You walk around and go, hey, I'm American. I want a coffee now. God damn you. What's
Team
wrong
America,
with this place?
Yeah.
The biggest thing you can do is not wear – Americans tend to wear clothes that have, like, writing on it. So if we go to a place, we'll buy a sweatshirt that has – you know, we'll buy a sweatshirt that says Rome. Right. And then we'll walk around Rome wearing the Rome shirt.
USA. USA. Sorry.
It's amazing that I've gotten pretty good at telling where people are from by how they dress. I mean, it's not an exact science, but you can tell someone's from Europe versus somebody from North America by how they dress. But no, I don't. I mean, I'm American. Just don't be a dick. I think that's always a good rule when you travel. That's all.
That's how I live my life.
And there are times where I want people to know I'm not a local, because especially if you're in Europe and you're white, people may come up to you and start, you know, speaking a different language. Whereas if they know you're not a local, they will, you know, not do that, or they'll behave a little bit different. So there are times where I think you don't want to necessarily fit in.
I whenever I'm in France or South America, I start every conversation with "I'm an Australian," just so they don't think I'm an American straight off the bat. It's amazing how the look of distrust in their eyes vanishes when you tell them you're an Australian. They go, "Oh, Aussie, yeah, Mad Max, Crocodile Dundee."
To be true, I was in Bali and some other places like the Solomon Islands.
Bali doesn't count. Yeah, no, Australians are a bunch of dickheads when they go to Bali, man.
I know. They assume you're Australian. I say, no, I'm American. They're like, oh, man.
yeah, you're welcome.
Australians and Bali is not a good mix, man. And I have to say, while I'm taking the piss out of American tourists, Australians, you can always tell the Australians because they're the drunk yobbos. The drunk ones going, hey, drunk, walking around, just sort of pissing on, ancient icons. That'll be the Australians. Shit-faced drunk.
The good thing is the title of worst tourists, I think, has been taken away from the Americans, and it has cleanly been taken by the Chinese.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they, travel in packs. They only eat at Chinese restaurants. In fact, you'll find a lot of Chinese restaurants in places like Rome because the tour buses will go there and the Chinese tourists, they want to eat Chinese food. I think it's a generational thing. I think in another generation, you're not going to see it as much. The package tours from like Japan, you don't see them as much anymore. People travel more independently. And I think you're going to see a younger group of Chinese people eventually start traveling. But I've been to a lot of places where the number of Chinese tourists is just really expanding and they're taking up a bigger and bigger chunk of tourism dollars.
Mm. Wow. Yeah, I think day five, Heather and I broke down and got Chinese food in Rome. We couldn't help it. We're like, oh my God, give me something that I recognize. But it was all good. It was just different from what we normally had.
You know what? I do that all the time. I wouldn't worry about it. I don't think that because you're in Italy, you have to eat Italian food every single meal. You're doing it wrong. If you want to eat Chinese some night, go eat Chinese.
Yeah. Oh
my God. Chinese. You didn't, so Ray, you didn't recognize pizza and pasta, they were foreign to you?
Oh, my wife didn't make it. No, but like the pizza was like super thin and we've been walking for hours. I'm like, there's no way I can eat this tiny little thin pizza and be filled up. But it was fantastic. It filled me up. We got walking again down the Tiber. So I was just naive. I was a typical American, but we literally started pointing things at the menu by the end of it. They would bring it. We had no idea what it was, or, because it's basically the same four ingredients made different ways. And we loved everything we had. So we had an absolute blast in Rome, especially when it came to the food and alcohol. I'm yours, Cam.
I'm totally the opposite to that, where if I go somewhere, I only want to eat and drink what is local. Like when I go to America, I don't go looking for Australian food. I want to eat trashy American food.
You
want to go to
Outback? Right.
Yeah. No, I don't do that. And if I go to Utah, I want Mexican, because really it is just Mexico.
Stolen Mexico.
The Mormons invaded Mexico. All right, Gary, so that's Rome. Where else in Italy, Gary, do you recommend that we visit?
Again, if you're just kind of looking for general Roman stuff, you have to, I think, go to Pompeii and Herculaneum. You'll see a lot of really interesting stuff there, including the people that were like covered in ash and their bodies were kind of entombed in like some sort of terrified pose. Really well-preserved mosaics. Paintings in the brothel house that show like explicit sex scenes. Mm-hmm. There's one place you'll find it where there's a dick carved onto one of the buildings, and it's like a this way to the brothel. So the dick directly is pointing to where it is. I'm dead serious.
I've been there. I've seen it. Yeah, yeah. Dick arrows.
And the other neat thing about going to Pompeii is like it's kind of the dumb little stuff, like the streets. They were basically, you could see how they were sewers because they had these stepping stones every so often for you to go across the street because the street would have been filled with shit and water and mud and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And you can tell kind of how it was structured that they had like, gutters and everything. The small little stops or shops that had like a place where you could put soup and that was their restaurant or a cafe or something. The little stuff like that where you see kind of how they live their daily life is kind of interesting.
Mm. And I have been to Pompeii, but I haven't been to Herculaneum. What's Herculaneum like? Is it similar?
Yeah, similar in some ways. I think it might even be a little bit better preserved, but it's not as big, and it doesn't get as many tourists.
And that's where the Villa of the Papyri is, I think, that we talked about recently. They think it was Calpurnius Piso's private library.
Yeah, is that there was a news story recently about how they had a encrusted scroll, mm-hmm. and they figured out how to read it without opening it using mm-hmm. a CAT scan or something. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Kind of fMRI scanner. We're going to be talking a lot about that in the Renaissance series because I think when they discovered the Villa of the Papyri in the mid-19th century, after they worked out that these lumps of coal were actually scrolls, charred scrolls, they stopped just burning them for firewood or just trying to rip them open and destroying them in the process, they discovered one of them was actually a copy of Lucretius's On the Nature of Things, and it's the second copy that we have, you know, ancient copy. The first one, it was the oldest copy for a start, but it was the first one that had been found since Poggio found one in the sort of early mid-14th century, I think, which was kind of part of the beginning of the Renaissance, was Poggio finding that document. Anyway, moving on. So you want to talk about Alexandria type things and we can cut this out and put it in the Alexander show, or do you want to talk about more Caesar stuff?
Well, there's a couple more Caesar things. Okay. In Spain, the town of Tarragona, so it's south of Barcelona along the coast, and you guys were just talking about this on the Caesar show when Augustus went to Spain. This was the capital of Iberia, and they still have the amphitheater there. They still have the walls around the city, and they have a statue to Augustus still there, so they've really kind of claimed him as his own, and they play it up for tourist purposes. In France, there's a lot of stuff along the coast, but if you go to Alesia, which is in Burgundy, the problem with a lot of the great battles is that there's really nothing there. I mean, it was a field. Right. They killed each other, and, you know, nothing was ever built. They've rebuilt some mm-hmm. of the fortifications and some of the ditches in Alesia that Caesar used when he was for the battle there. And mm-hmm. so you can at least kind of get a feel for what it might have been like when they did the double envelopment and all the stuff like that. But again, that nothing there is original.
Do they have the statue of Vercingetorix there?
Yeah, that's the place they have it, I think.
Yeah, I want to see that, man. Ooh,
nice.
Sexy, and, you know, sexy statue. For Roman stuff, there's a couple other really interesting places. If you go to Israel and you go to Masada, because it was – so Masada was where – so after the
destruction of the temple.
Yeah, the Jews hit up there. There was a mountain fortification, and Rome laid siege to it. And what they did is they built a ramp, basically, to get up on the mountain. And the ramp is still there. And the other cool thing is that the square fortification that the Romans make when they set up camp is still there. And because there's basically no rain in the Dead Sea, there's all this stuff is kind of as it was. There's really been no erosion, no rainfall, no nothing. And so while Masada itself is kind of really interesting, being able to see these siege works, I can't think of any place else in the world where you can see the siege works and an original kind of outline of a Roman encampment other than Masada.
And Masada, I think we talked about that not too long ago on the Caesar show, was actually built by Herod as a sort of a refuge for himself. Yeah, so it's got an amazing history. Yeah, I've always wanted to go to Masada.
Another, you know, some other just great Roman ruins, not necessarily from the time. The town of Jeresh in Jordan. There's actually a lot of cool stuff in Jordan that people kind of forget. And now is a great time to go because of all the stuff that's happening in the Middle East, nothing's happening in Jordan, but people kind of have canceled their plans. So if you wanted to go to Petra or something like that, now is a great time to go because you basically have the whole thing to yourself. Caesarea in Israel, I went to, that was kind of the Roman port on the Mediterranean. For that area, there's a hippodrome that's there, kind of a very old aqueduct that's there. And the place I've not been to that I really want to go most of all, but it's very difficult to get to right now, is Leptis Magna in Libya. which is probably the best preserved kind of Roman city outside of, you know, Pompeii being covered by a volcano in the world, where you can still see a lot of the original amphitheaters and big structures.
What'd you call it? Leptis Magna?
Leptis Magna, yeah. And the reason it's just hard to get to right now is just kind of the general problems with Libya. I've heard that there's actually a group of people that are defending it, locals. So, you know, no one comes in and steals anything. Then they avoid the problems that they had in Syria with ISIS destroying a lot of the antiquities.
Right. Good for them.
I'm looking at photos of it on my computer right now. That's amazing.
And I've been told that there are some tours that will go there, and they basically come by boat. So they do a sea landing, so you're not really having to go through Libya at all to visit. I don't have a lot of details on that, but yeah, it's a place that I really would like to visit someday. And then there's some cool places in Lebanon as well, and in Syria that probably not going to be visiting anytime soon. Lebanon's fine right now, but probably not in Syria. But there's a lot of Roman ruins out there, even smaller things that may not get a lot of attention. Just part of some building that may be sitting off in a forest, or you know, it's kind of remarkable just how much there is and how much still exists.
It's plenty in France too. I remember being down in the south of France, Provence, and places like that, and just coming across, you know, Roman ruins. It's amazing.
Yeah, there's a great amphitheater, kind of a prototype of the Colosseum in Verona. If you go a little bit north, and you know, once you start getting in that part of Italy, you know, if you want to talk Renaissance stuff, there's so much that's available because a lot of that still exists. You know, Florence, you can spend, you know, a couple days there. I survived for 2 days on nothing but gelato and steak Florentine. Something I highly recommend.
That's a diet. I think it's called the Arnt diet. Yeah, I love Florence, and definitely I want that to be on the tour. And that's obviously doing the Renaissance show. It's all started in Florence, so that's hopefully by the time we get there, we'll be sort of up and running in a good way with the Renaissance show, and people will appreciate it a lot more than I did when I was first there a dozen years ago or so. Know more about it. I mean, it's beautiful, but I think know more of the history. It's great.
There's a new show on Netflix called The Medicis, and it's the guy who played Robb Stark in Game of Thrones is Cosmo de' Medici. Wow. Kind of interesting. They shoot a lot of it on location. You might want to check it out if you haven't seen it. Interesting fun fact, the Uffizi Gallery in Florence was owned by the Medici family and all the art inside. And technically... so the Medici line kind of died out. There were no heirs. If somebody today could prove that they are an heir to the Medici fortune, they owned Uffizi Gallery. It's technically, I mean, I guess the government owns it, but I think legally somebody still in theory could come forward and claim it, which would be pretty cool if they did.
Well, there you go, people. Go and check your bloodlines.
That's go on Ancestry.com. That's plan A. Plan B is, Gary, we are going to ask you to buy the podcast from us, give us a whole bunch of money so that we can go travel for a while. Does that sound fair to you?
I think you guys need to be doing more ads. Audible.com.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where the money that's where the money is. Audible ads,
Yeah.
I've been to the Uffizi. It's amazing. Yeah. It's got, you know, just a lot of the classics that you see in your Renaissance books. Rembrandt's self-portrait, Caravaggio's painting of the Medusa head, some Da Vinci, you know, the Adoration of the Magi. It's like you know, you said before, oh, it's got Botticelli's Birth of Venus. It's like you said before, though, like if people go, oh, not another art gallery, not another old church. What I found when I was first over there is after a few weeks traveling around Umbria and Tuscany and Rome, is that my brain sort of struggled just to comprehend It's like, oh, okay, so here's another great fucking masterpiece that I have to sit here and appreciate. And I just couldn't squeeze it all in. I think I'd spent too much time there in one hit. My brain just overloaded with awesomeness. Do you ever find that?
Yeah, it can be overwhelming. I think when you go to a place like the Uffizi or the Louvre, don't try to see everything because you can't. And it's just going to be overwhelming. Kind of develop a plan. Okay, so you want to see the highlights. You want to see the Birth of Venus and see those things. And, you know, you're going to wander around. But don't feel obligated that you're going to have to see everything because it's just not possible. And I think to also, like I said, put everything kind of in perspective about why was all this stuff created? You know, there's usually some sort of sponsor behind it. That was responsible for the creation of certain types of artwork, and all this stuff kind of has a small part to play in the kind of the big historical puzzle of why did all this shit happen, and who was behind it, and what were the factors. And I think when you think of it in those terms, a lot of these things become a lot more interesting rather than just, oh, old stuff.
Well, that's, you know, what I hope to achieve with our Renaissance series, is because we're going to be talking about the politics, the Ghibellinis and the Guelphs, and the fights between the kings and the popes, and then the rise of the Popolo, and then of course the rise of the Medicis, and try and put the Renaissance in terms of art and literature and architecture and sculpture and all of those sorts of things in context with what had been happening and continued to happen politically in that region, and hopefully it'll make a more sense. Hopefully people will understand the perspective.
Give some context,
why these things happen, how they were created, why they were created.
That would be cool.
All right. Well, Gary, I think the time has come. We should wrap it up, but really fascinating, man. You have almost been everywhere, which makes me remember I was supposed to play this.
So jealous.
Let me guess, Johnny Cash.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa.
Did you know this was originally an Australian song?
Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been...
I think Cam's jamming right now.
Of course,
can't hear you.
Of course I knew that. And I was then, after I settled you in, I was going to play you this, the Rolf Harris version. Rolf, currently in jail over a pedophilia in England, but before that, one of Australia's greatest entertainers. This is his version.
Driving my mini motorway down by the sea, when a scruffy looking hitchhiker thumped the lift from me. I said, hop up inside, boy, where did you plan to go from there? He says, I don't give a continental cuddle boy, because I've been everywhere. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Never in trouble or care, man. I've never paid me fair, man. And I've traveled, I've had me share, man. I've been everywhere. Been a Bradford, Guildford, Oxford, Little Anna, Bedford, Chickford, Hereford, Woolhampton, Shrewsbury, Canterbury, Asby, Liverpool, Scunthorpe, Sandthorpe, Mapplethorpe, Potterford, Whitehall, Blackpool, Millthorpe, Netport, Newport, Southport, Stockport, Highport. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I'm never in trouble or care, man. I've never paid me fair, man. And I've traveled, I've had me share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man.
So anyway, that's the theme song for your life now, Gary, is it?
Yeah, I've heard it a lot. There's actually a song by Lemon Jelly that I really like called Ramblin' Man, where the guy just lists off a bunch of places around the world.
Wow.
Before I leave,
yeah,
I would like Ray to get a book, you know, to get Australia for Dummies, because I've been listening to the show for a long time, and mm-hmm. I get it, Cam rips on the U.S., but because everybody knows about the U.S., and no one knows shit about Australia. And I've been all over Australia, and there's been so many times I've been waiting like, oh, man, Ray should come back with this, or, you know, some sort of thing Australians did. But he doesn't know about it. So I'm hoping, you know, study a little bit of Australian history before you go visit, and, you know, use that opportunity. To bring up the stuff.
The flaw in your plan, Gary, is you're asking Ray to actually do something. So that's never going to happen. He's not going to read a fucking...
Is there an audio?
Yeah, is there an audio
book? Is there an audio book version?
Like a compressed audio book version that he can...
Can I hire someone to read it to me?
Yeah. 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 Well, yeah. Nice.
No,
nice
I will idea. Take you up on that, Gary, I look forward to that.
Yeah. 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 Sure.
And I don't know what you're planning on doing in Australia, but there's, you know, it's a big country and there's a lot of neat stuff to do. Get in a car, you know, up and down. I've driven from Darwin to Perth. I've driven from, well, in chunks, Adelaide all the way up to Cairns. In bits and pieces from Darwin to Adelaide. So, yeah, I've been all over Australia. Love it. Spent a lot of time there. And, I think you'll definitely enjoy it.
How many fist fights did you get into?
Oh, actually, one. So I was eating at a KFC in Sydney. I shit you not. And it was one of these open door things where it's kind of like, you know, it was warm outside. And this drunk Australian comes up and he sticks his hand in my box of chicken. And he just picks it up and starts fucking eating it. I was like, what the fuck are you doing?
It's probably game.
He's like, oh, I'm hungry and I want chicken. And yeah, there was a short scuffle there. But yeah, one.
That's a well-known Australian. Come on, man. He was testing, yes, if you wanted to go back for a little bit of limoncello. That's all it was.
I want your chicken.
Yeah. Yeah.
So talk like Tarzan. Chicken, me one. I'm hungry.
Can you say g'day, you know, properly? After all the time you spent here?
G'day.
Oh, not bad. Not bad. I'll give that a passing mark. Nice work, Gary.
I've had Tim Tams. Mm-hmm. I've...
Do you know how to eat a meat pie properly?
I know not. There's no. I don't know. It depends.
Yeah. Okay.
How do you eat them? I mean...
I can't.
I've had the meat pies. I don't know if I'm eating them properly, though.
Yeah, well, if you
don't. Actually, that's one of the things I like about Australia is that we don't have meat pies in our country. And I know that there's been a couple Australian pie places that have tried opening up chains. I think there's some stores in, like, New York or something. Mm. I don't know if they've ever taken off, though. Mm.
No, you don't get it. It's too sophisticated.
Probably.
Sure.
Yeah. Nation of criminals.
Yes, and proud of it, motherfucker. All right. Well, Gary, I hope we get to travel with you one day. I hope we get to do something.
Yes.
You sound like a fun guy to travel with, as well as an award. And you could do some award-winning photography with us in it. So, I mean, that's going to take you to a whole
new level. And let me say to everyone, you know, really consider, you know, when you guys run your tour, people should really consider doing it because I think it'd be fun. And I think it'd be a fun way to see Europe and a lot of these places. And if you've not been to these places before, if you haven't been to Rome and you haven't been to Florence, you really owe it to yourself to do it. I think that traveling with you guys would be a very good way to do it and a hell of a lot more fun than doing it on a bus full of old people.
Yes, we are fun, Ray.
We are more fun than old people. That's the motto.
We had fun in Vegas, even though Ray spent most of the time throwing up. But, you know, we still had fun. We're going to have fun on this tour. I think, we're not experts, but we know a little bit and we'll have a good time. It's going to be so high. People will
just
come
enough on. To be dangerous. Yeah. Exactly. We're going to learn a lot too, together as a group. Together. It's going to mean so much more that way.
Yes. Yeah. Learning together in this hot tub at the end of the night. We'll be learning a lot.
There'll be a quiz in the hot tub at the end of each day.
All right. We've got to go and record other shows, Gary.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
Before
you're awesome.
You go, tell people where they can see your photographs, follow you online, all that kind of stuff.
My website is everything-everywhere.com. And from there, you can find links to all the various social media places you can follow me.
Everything-everywhere.com.
Pretty presumptuous.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I'm working on it. It's a goal.
Thank you, Gary. Unt.
Take care.
Have a good one, mate.
All right.
Okay, all right.
Thank you. Bye-bye.